A62. Number 24A.
I was saying that there is some kind of method and wisdom in taking a example, an exemplary achievement of a new paradigm, and see if one can reason it out in the same way. Therefore, here you could have a possibility, say, to take now the textbook and try to read the textbook structurally with the help of my book here, because in chapter 3 I give indications of the main tone in an epitome and of the subtones in epitome, which means that you could train yourself by reading the text and saying, now, could I see this epitome too? Would I also epitomize the whole subject as I have done it? You don't need to feel that you have to epitomize it that way. You can change your epitome. But the safety first would be first to see why I put, say, the epitome as they are, which means always, why did I stress a certain subject, a certain point in the text, and not other points in the text? Because it's quite reasonable, say, when you then come to the textbook, to other chapters where you have perhaps 15 pages, and you are asked to epitomize 15 pages into one sentence, it's quite an art. And it means that one has to see out of the enormous lot of information that is in the text, which one is the most important one, and therefore needs a tonality consciousness that is cultured enough to hear the main tone. Then, when you do that, you can then go to the subtones and see how can we epitomize the subtones. And there comes another training ground, namely to see that the subtones should always have reference to the main tone. Would you see that? That the dominant must run right through the subtones, or we have lost the train of thought. We have lost the tonality. Let's take, for instance, together just the epitomes of mind. If you take page 87, there we have mind first in bold letters, and the epitome which I have given for that whole tone of mind is the effects of animal magnetism are due to the influence of the imagination to illusion. Now, what you can do is, or what you should do in order to drill yourself in this interpretation is to take such an epitome and ask yourself various questions. Ask yourself not only, is that really the pith of the whole text that you have been reading in the textbook, but also ask yourself now, where do I see in this sentence the tone of mind, so that this epitome must resound a tonality of mind. Now here you have that the effects of animal magnetism are due to, now you define really animal magnetism through what? Through mind, huh? Influence. We know now influence is an idea of mind, It is the influence even of what? Of the imagination, which is the counterfeit of mind, you see, to illusion, which is a counterfeit of mind. So actually, when one knows the tonality of mind, you cannot mistake really here the that mind is here described to a counterfeit sense, naturally, because it's animal magnetism. So can you hear here now the main tone that animal magnetism is what? Influence, imagination, illusion. You get the whole counterfeit of mind. Then this whole thing, this whole tone is presented in seven subtones. Mind as mind. Now again you would have to ask yourself when you read this epitome, we can read it quickly together. Animal magnetism is regarded as a so-called force which can be exerted by one living organism on another. So here you have what? If we could even abbreviate more, animal magnetism is a so-called force. And you have what? You have mind. Huh? Mind is mind. But that animal magnetism, which was described as that influence, that mesmeric influence of imagination, is now considered through mind to be a force, to be a power. So you have mind as mind. You go to the next one, mind as spirit. The influence of this force works through the substance of the nerves. Where do you have mind? Where do you have spirit in it? What is mind? The influence of this force. You see, I refer back here to make a nice running story that the influence of this force, which was described in mind as mind, huh? And where is spirit? Substance. It believes, you see, that mind can work through the substance of the nerves. Yes? So you have mind as spirit. We go to the next page, mind as soul. The observable effects of magnetic forces. You have again that magnetic forces, huh, of mind. Are due to what? To the excitement of the imagination and to sense impression. What is that?
Soul.
Soul. Huh? You have really a wonderful combination of mind as soul. Excitement, huh? It's the counterfeit of soul, of the balance of soul. Of the imagination, mind. Huh? Of what? Of sense impression, soul. Yes? Then we go to principle on the next page. The assertion of animal magnetism do not stand up to scientific investigation. What do you have here as principle? Scientific investigation. That's the tone of principle showing that animal magnetism can never stand up to science. That it has no scientific proof within itself. You go to the next page, mind as life. Animal magnetism's influence, we have again that influence, is never constructive. It is destructive for both patient and practitioner. Is that life? Yeah? Why? Constructive, destructive, huh? Yeah? Life is always supporting, maintaining, providing, sustaining. The moment you have the opposite, it is destructive. We come to truth on page 92. The healing effects of animal magnetism are deceptive and illusory. What is truth about here?
Healing effects.
It's a healing, yeah, but it's deceptive. It fools you. It's absolutely fooling us and says something. It says a great lie. It says, I can heal when it can't heal. Yeah. And then we come to love. The seeming benefit derived from animal magnetism is in proportion to the belief in esoteric magic. What is here, love? Yeah, the benefit, huh? Yes. The success, the achievement, the fulfillment, you see. And then Mrs. Eddy changes the subject. And goes on to spirit. Well, that's the way you could really go over the whole text and in this way get much clearer acquainted with the story that runs through it. So, do you see how when you can epitomize something in just a few epitomes, it is so easy then afterwards to retain really the substance of the whole text. You see, once you have seen that, you can now at once say, let's make an agreement, huh? That you don't look any more down, only up now, huh? So that you don't look into the book. Huh? And see, if we are able, just by knowing now, you see, that we have a subject that is called animal magnetism, and that from the point of view of mind, it is what? A so-called influence, yes? We know now that, huh? Therefore a force, a power, an influential power, huh? So that's the overall tone. Now we go, we know now something else, that it runs through the seven. So we can go and say now, what is that influence as mind, mind as mind?
Nature of imagination or illusion?
It's imagination, it's an illusion, it is a force, Yeah, it's a so-called force. You go to spirit. What is spirit here saying? That this imagination is what? And it says it acts through a substance of matter. You see, it's now naturally the negative that is always brought out too. Then you come to soul and say, what is this imagination? When does that force of imagination work the best? When does it work the best? You see, through emotionalism, ecstasy, excitement, to the senses. Yeah, isn't it? Is that so difficult? You go to principle and say, now, what is this imagination when it is met by principle? What happens within? You remember? Has no signs in it? Cannot stand up to scientific interpretation or scientific research? What do we get? That? What is that imagination when it is life, the counterfeit of life? Destructive, huh? You see? What is it when it is from the point of view of truth? Deceptive, it's a lie, it's fooling us. What is it from the point of view of love? Yeah, no good at all, no benefit in it. No matter if it even appears temporary that there is a benefit in it, as it was in Mesmer's time that he healed the people and then they were not really benefited by it. Is it so difficult? No? Can you see the what you gain by scientific interpretation? Isn't that? Yeah? So, I said, the danger has always been, right from the start when John Dolly was here, the danger has always been that everybody thought that everyone can interpret now the textbook and the Bible the way they like it. You see? Whereas he was trying to show the very opposite. He was trying to show that the interpretation must be system intrinsic, system coherent. You know what I mean with system intrinsic? It must be free from personal interpretation. Therefore, it must interpret the system, but you must have criteria in order to prove if that interpretation is actually supporting the system. Here you have it. For instance, that's naturally only a very slight, very simple way of showing the system intrinsic interpretation, that you can see that the dominant was always the same. It was the belief that animal magnetism is a force of that can influence something. And all the subtones always carried that dominant tone through. It didn't vary. It didn't vary. Just was all about the same tone. And so I feel if one begins to train oneself in reading the textbook with the help of some examples, one is helped very much. You know, one cannot fool science. You know, I have seen at the time of John Dolly and afterwards that the students felt, I'm a genius, you know, because we are teaching that life is a genius, and everybody has access to the individuality of life, the newness of life, the uniqueness of life. And so they began to interpret everything that John Dolly had interpreted in a new way. And they felt it was quite an achievement to interpret, say, something that Mr. Dolly interpreted in the world order, to interpret it now in the Christ order, and then in the Christianity order, and in the science order, things like that. But it's interesting, not one of these interpretations could stand the time. They came and went. What is not scientifically grounded somehow just doesn't stand. And therefore, we cannot be too consecrated, really, only to let the system of science interpret the text and be free from any personal interpretation, inspirational interpretation, mystical interpretation, atomistic interpretation. We really have to learn that wonderful art of reading and interpreting. I know at the time when I was showing the textbook for the first time and the chapters in a layout way back 25 years ago or so, you really must feel that I'm an old man by now. You know, many of my students also felt, oh yes, that's very nice, but that's Max's interpretation. I can interpret chapter on prayer my way. I don't need Max. He's quite all right. He's a nice guy. He may interpret that very nicely, but I can interpret it another way. So they did it. Not one could stand the time. Not one. It just, when something is not right, it cannot stand. Cannot stand. So it's no use to try to be original. That's the greatest trap in which we can walk into, to try to be original. John Dolly was very, very hot on that point. He said, don't try to be original. You know, he really could shout out things when he when he was going on. He was a wonderful loving man, but my word, you should see him when he went off the deep end, He really then told us, And that was one of his things. He said, don't try to be original. How can we be original, life, when we have not seen mind, spirit, soul to the point of principle, and principle interprets. And only when we have seen principle, we find our original interpretation, not before. Therefore, I'm so glad that somehow, because I think in my nature at that time I was very shy. You wouldn't believe it now. I was awfully shy. I was not very self-confident about things. I always had a feeling, all right, I'm quite happy if I do what John Dorley has written and then try to understand what he did. And that was my safety, I feel. Therefore, I spent years and years and years, you know, just poring over what he did. I never had a feeling, let me do something by my own. Let's add to John Dorley something what he hasn't said. And I think for about 14 years, I could say, I wasn't doing anything else than just try to listen to what he said, I mean to the tonality of what he said, to listen to what he wrote, and get into the flow of it. And then I think that was a basis which was solid enough that afterwards I could see, I could build on that foundations. And very few, one hand is quite enough, it is even too much to count the students who did that. Therefore, try not to be original. Try not to do something which nobody has yet done. It is quite enough to be a disciple of a principle. That's already quite an achievement. And only then the spirit will move us and will move the individual and play on those strings of the system of principle and play a new tune and bring out a new composition. A new composition. That's my advice. You can take it or leave it. That's your business. Huh? But at least I gave it. And I have to give it because I guess that's somehow what I can give from my experience. See, I had my hand in that whole science for 40 years and another 20 years before in the church science. So I have seen a lot, and I have seen more tragedies than other things. I have seen very few real success. I've seen tragedies of students, because they did not want to go along the scientific method. And they ran into a bottle street, a street that has no, a dead-end street. Yeah. Their whole life they run and run and didn't see that they were running in a dead-end street. You know what it means that when you are then 60 and 70 and you find out that you have been running in the dead-end street. It's not a honeymoon, that. Huh? It's not a picnic. It's tragedy. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy said, you know, just to weave one thread of science through the looms of time is in itself a wonder. It is. And it can't be careful enough in the study of science to really go along the science line and not to be sidetracked by mysticism, by speculation, by combinatorics. This is difficult. It's a danger. And as you are in this class, I have to say that. Though I don't like to say it, but I have to say it. Stick to your categories. See? Yes?
What the last term you used?
Combinatorics. Combinatorics is the meaningless combination of facts. Combining facts. Speculating with facts. This is called combinatorics, because in science you can combine anything, as we have seen. any idea with any other idea. But the question is, does it make sense? You see? And this is the danger, and John Dolly warned us, but very few listen to it, not because they didn't want to listen to it, because they didn't understand what he meant by it. What he meant by it. All right. That was a side remark. Very important one. Very important one. Then, so you can go through that text in this way, culture, consciousness in this way. We don't do that now. And then we go on in my book and come to chapter 4, where I've given now what I felt would be a corresponding presentation in the Bible. When I was studying that chapter on animal magnetism and the revisions, it was at the same time, interesting enough, when I was also preparing another summer school, namely on the minor prophets. I had two subjects to prepare at the same time, one for England and one for Switzerland. I was preparing the summer school on the minor prophets, and I came across, naturally, the minor prophet called Joel. And as I was reading that, I said, well, he's telling us the same story in his language, for his time, and so you can see, if you compare the message of the Bible, mind in the part of the Bible, with mind in the part of science and health, in the chapter Animal Magnetism, that there is a very great similarity in it, so that one could clearly say that Mrs. Eddy was showing the prophet Joel, so to say, in the modern language of science. Which is very important, because one always says, well, Christian Science must be supported by the Bible, must collaborate with the Bible. And so I was glad that I would find just at that point such a collaboration.